good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. The Nova M Radio Network. Welcome to tonight's program. If you watched any of the testimony today in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee, you saw the top-ranking general in Iraq, John Abizaid, testifying all over the Hill, trying to explain his the confusing and conflicting statements his on troop levels in Iraq. It was there was a couple times a day I just wanted to start gouging my own eyes out or sticking pencils in my ear. It was unbelievable. You talk about he sounded like O.J. Simpson's lawyer. And I get to that in a second. I've never seen such twirling and twisting and dancing. And he doesn't have to do this anymore because Rumsfeld is gone. Well, Rumsfeld is not completely gone yet. I guess Rumsfeld could make Abizaid's life hell. But it was shocking to watch. It reminded me of watching General William Westmoreland back in the early 70s. Testifying about how the hearts and minds of the Vietnamese people had been won, and it was just a matter of time before we could declare victory. Of course, 58,000 Americans were dead by then. By the way, Bush is going to Vietnam, finally. It was hard today to sit and listen to these hearings, knowing how many people have died. How many Americans? How many Iraqis? How many have been raped? How many have been maimed and scarred? How many children have been blown to pieces? How many parents have screamed into the night and will continue to scream for the rest of their lives because their children have been murdered? It's incredible. All of this for no damn good reason at all. We have been in Iraq almost longer than we were involved in World War II. And the American people still haven't received a straight answer from the Bush crime family as to why we went there in the first place. Every reason has been a lie. What the hell does it take? You invade a country, depose the leader, put him on trial, convict him, sentence him to death. Isn't it time to leave? And now we're focused on exit strategies. I've got an exit strategy for you. Pack up and get the hell out. There is not a single valid, rational explanation for our being there at all. Nothing. There was not a valid reason for Gulf War I. That was set up by the old man, by Bush I. So the Bush crime family tries to convince us that Iraq has become... And they're doing a good job of convincing me that Iraq has become the central front in the war on terror because the Bush crime family set it up that way. These are evil people. These are people whose souls are absolutely rotten. Unbelievable. We'll talk about it in just a minute. Anyway, let me just add a postscript to that. I think Abizaid's testimony today put an exclamation point behind the declaration Bush and Cheney must be impeached. Absolutely no question about it. Last night I mentioned about there's a video at crooksandliars.com, video clip of Newt Gingrich's pledge in 1994 to, quote, spend the next 2 years investigating corruption on the Clinton administration. And in that same video, Gingrich said, I do not know of any administration in modern times with as many different potential scandals all around it, end quote. And you'll remember, after this ignorant slob made that statement, this page molesting, getting oral sex in the congressional parking lot, Newt Gingrich, after he made that statement and the investigations began, you remember what Ken Starr concluded after the Clintons had the distinct horror of being the two most investigated people probably in the history of this republic, if not the world. What did Ken Starr say? There was nothing, nowhere, nothing. Nothing. Well, George in Alhambra, who sent me the reminder about that video, sent me another email. He said there's quite a bit more about Gingrich in the video posted at Crooks and Liars. One other quote from Newt in 1994 as the Republicans took control of Congress is this, quote, "We're going to be open to working with everyone. We will cooperate with anyone, and we will compromise with no one." And a memo from Gingrich to Republican staffers said the following, quote, "Advise House Democrats that they face fines and imprisonment if they destroy any House documents," end quote. And George closed by saying, don't you love the spirit of getting along? Gingrich always fancied himself to be some sort of a Roman general who, not the fighting type, but more like a the general that was left behind to govern the territories that that Caesar conquered. Gingrich's first and foremost, like most Republican every Republican politician's first and foremost, he's a coward, an utter coward. When it comes to actually following through on the blood and gore that's required to impose the policies that he and the Republicans insist are absolutely necessary globally. He's a coward. Every single Republican who insists on U.S. global dominance, every single Republican politician who insists on beginning wars and forcing so-called democracy down the throats of people and neoliberal economic policy is a coward. And would no more put on a uniform or pick up a weapon than they would have when they were young enough to have done such a thing. They are cowards. They are bloody, bleeding cowards. Only the blood that they're covered in is someone else's. These people are just incredibly vile. How do we get here? The American Spectator, which I don't know if it's still run by right-wing money. I would assume it is. American Spectator has a 53-minute, this is from Dave in San Mateo. American Spectator has a 53-minute video of Jack Murtha talking with the government investigator in the Abscan investigation. The flying monkeys are gunning for Murtha, and they're spinning this video as if he's guilty. You can find it. Well, you can go to spectator.org or go to video.google.com and look for the Murtha video. Dave writes, I know this is very time-consuming, but it's worth watching. Multiple times, Murtha says he only wants investment and jobs in his district and legitimate deposits in local banks unconnected with him. I don't want to whitewash what's going on. Murtha is fully aware he's being bribed and that his colleagues are going for the cash. Murtha also leaves the door open for future payoffs. He says, quote, now I'm not saying that someday you've made an offer. It may be that I'll change my mind someday, end quote. Dave writes, this can be interpreted to mean that he's truly interested in taking the cash in the future or that he doesn't want to slam the door on a lucrative deal for his district. Now it's easy to sit here, Dave concludes, and say that Murtha should have stood up and walked away and even reported these guys to the FBI. That's what he should have done. But ultimately he refused the bribe. And the bottom line is, he wasn't indicted or prosecuted because there was no case. Well, I appreciate the effort some of you are making to educate me on this because, like I said, the other night when I saw that article earlier this week, it was just like, whoops, you know, I'd forgotten about that, the Abscam thing. Not that I ever knew it. I didn't know who John Murtha was back in 1980. I mean, who in the hell did? That's 26 years ago. These right-wing dungsters are so quick to bring something like this to our attention. But now, and Kathy tells me that today she's doing some work here on the house, stripping a fireplace, paint off a fireplace, and she was saying, I was listening to Limbaugh, and either the fumes of the paint stripper got to me or Limbaugh, but Limbaugh is talking about Murtha as if he's a war criminal. Again, I say it, and I just mean it. When the lights go out, please, please, please let me be close to Limbaugh.
Hey, neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's more Mike Malloy.
You know, there's no human being on this planet who is more irrelevant to all the other human beings on the planet than O.J. Simpson. I can remember 11 years ago when when the jury nullification occurred, for whatever reason, I'm not even going to get into the reasons, but when O.J. Simpson was found to be not guilty of the murder of Ron Brown and his wife, O.J. Simpson's wife, Nicole. But now, Simpson, to me, does represent an evil that even goes beyond Rumsfeld. And I can't, it's difficult to explain. I guess because Simpson continues to dance around out in the public, signing autographs, playing golf, smiling at the cameras. There's something about Simpson that just turns my stomach, but at the same time, terrifies me. Rumsfeld, for some reason, doesn't terrify me. I see him as kind of disgusting, warmongering, should be on trial, should be made to face the ghosts of all the people he's ordered dead. But Simpson, who murdered two people up close and personal, and yet walks a father of two, strolls around like his dung doesn't smell, and acts as though he's a normal human being. This is a guy who murdered his mother's children and another innocent person, Ron Goldman. He's vile. He's filthy. His children's mother. I don't know. There's something about Simpson that to me personifies the worst kind of evil, the kind of evil that when you go to a horror flick at the movies, if you still do that, and the really creepy character that's murdering all the college students at camp or wherever the hell they are, that kind of creep, just a vile, filthy creep. Well, Fox Entertainment Channel and Harper's, one of HarperCollins' imprints, Judith Regan's book, both of which are owned by Rupert Murdoch, are coming together to release a book he's going to write about what might have happened. You know, it's Simpson saying, well, you know, I've been studying the case, and here's how it could have happened. This evil son of a bitch, this half-human, if he's that, is now going to release a book and be interviewed on Fox. Rupert Murdoch owns the rights to both. And this is the creep. My language is going to slip here. So if you got kids in the car, be careful. But this Murdoch, this evil son of a bitch, whom last night we found out engineered a $2 million payoff to what this country considers to be terrorists. Not that I agree with that, but what this country considered to be terrorists in order to free two of their employees in the Middle East, money that apparently, according to WorldNet Daily, and take anything you read there with a grain of salt, money that will now be used to blow up children on his buses in downtown Tel Aviv. The same Murdoch. Here's another one. Here's another filthy, slimy half-human. This is the Murdoch whose Fox News channel and the cyborgs, the filthy humans that work there, and I mean O'Reilly and Hannity and the rest of the scum, they were making such a big deal last year about Christmas, right? Put Christ back in Christmas. Put Christmas back in the department stores. These sons of bitches are now going to release this book to take advantage of the Christmas shopping buying season. This is what they think of their Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. They would urinate all over his open wounds if they could make money doing it. And that's exactly what they're doing. How can anyone in America tune in to the Fox News Channel? It is a vile, filthy nest of rats and cockroaches. Every single person who works there, every secretary, every receptionist, every on-air talking head, radio or television in the ad department, they are scum. And now they're doing this. You hypocritical bastards, you. Screaming and whining last year about Christmas, about happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas. And now these animals, Judith Regan and Rupert Murdoch, are taking this subhuman creature, O.J. Simpson's, first-person account of a double murder and releasing it on Fox Entertainment Channel. Jesus Christ, is there no bottom? Is there no bottom in this society to what people won't do? I go to commercials. Go.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Mike in Minnesota emailed in. It's not Ron Brown. It was Ron Goldman, the other person other than his wife that O.J. Simpson brutally murdered. Sorry, I got confused. It was Nicole Brown Simpson. Ron Goldman was the young man who was brutally murdered by this psychopath. I can't believe... And I'm not going to dwell on it, but I can't believe that Murdoch and Judith Regan have decided to do this. I'm not surprised that Simpson would do it. If he could dig up his wife's corpse and cut it into billions of little pieces and sell off chunks, he would do that. He's a demon. Oh, Christ. Oh, God. And the other thing about Fox, now this is how it was reported at worldnetdaily.com. Somebody sent this to me because I don't go to that slimy website. But it's reported this way, and I don't agree with these adjectives regarding the Palestinians. But here's what it says. Palestinian terror groups and security organizations in the Gaza Strip received $2 million from a United States source in exchange for the release of Fox News employees Steve Santani and Oleg Wig, were kidnapped here last summer. A senior leader of one of the groups suspected of the abductions told WorldNet Daily. The terror leader said his organization's share of the money was used to purchase weapons, which he said would be utilized to, quote, hit the Zionists, end quote. He said he expects the payments for Santani and Wig's freedom will encourage Palestinian groups to carry out further kidnappings. Now, again, anything you read at WorldNet Daily, you have to take with a trainload of salt. But let's assume, for the sake of argument, that that's true. Is not Fox, in addition to domestic terrorism with O.J. Simpson, Fox News Channel is now involved in Middle East terrorism. And didn't this coward in the White House say that anyone who supports terrorism, pays for terrorism, finances terrorism, is a terrorist? Why is Murdoch walking around? Why is Fox News Channel on the air? Why are people like O'Reilly and Hannity allowed to open their mouths except to say not guilty? Jesus God. I swear, you know, if conservatives really wanted to do something decent for this country, and if they really believed in their core principles, that's the way I should put it, if they really believed in their core principles, they would lobby to shut Fox News Network down. Now, at thinkprogress.org, interesting, under the heading of global leadership, as Bush goes to Vietnam, White House website displays the wrong flag. Today, President Bush visits Vietnam for the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit, looking to burnish his foreign policy credentials. He's off to a miserable start. Yesterday, the White House website featured a graphic with the flags of the three countries he's visiting on his trip, Singapore, Vietnam, and Indonesia. One problem, instead of displaying the Vietnamese flag, the White House graphic featured the old flag of South Vietnam. That flag hasn't been the official flag of Vietnam since South Vietnam surrendered to North Vietnam in 1975. The display of the old flag is highly incendiary to the current Vietnamese government. NPR reported last year the display of the old flag anywhere in the United States, much less on the White House website, quote, could create tension amid warming relations between the United States and Vietnam, end quote. That there is nothing that these morons can do that is diplomatic, correct, sensible, rational, logical. Jesus, God, it just never stops. So Bush is going to Vietnam. Imagine that. He's going to Vietnam, where he will do his usual George Bush Chamber of Commerce, glad hand, where's the camera, let me smile in that direction, act with some of the very people that he agreed should all be murdered and killed and blown to pieces and Agent Oranged and destroyed 35 years ago, as long as somebody else did it. The wrong flag. The top U.S. general in the Middle East, like we mentioned at the beginning of the program, said today that violence in Iraq was unacceptably high, but Iraqis, not American troops, must solve the problem. Well, General Abbasid, when the hell is that going to happen, and how many more Americans have to die for that to happen? You know, we all know Iraqis have a different value on human life. They don't count when they blow up 50 or 100 or 7,000. And as far as our murdering and raping and pillaging, it doesn't matter either because they are not quite as human as American fighters, right? The Iraqi fighters are, I don't know, they're scum. They're slopes. They're gooks. They're dinks. They're japs. They're krauts. Dagos and wops. What is the term today? They're camel jockeys. They're sand niggers. What is the term that we're using today to demonize another national group? Huh? So they don't care. Okay, fine. What about the nice Americans? Do we count? Abbasid told the Senate Armed Services Committee, quote, I believe more American forces prevent the Iraqis from doing more, taking more responsibility for their future. Then why don't we get out? No, can't get out. Why not? Well, we have to be there. Why? So the Iraqis can stand up so we can stand down. Jesus, God, did you watch any of it today? Did you? I have a question for you, General. Who then should die? So that the Iraqis will stand up. What American? Why don't you take the stars off your shoulders, you cretin freak, and get in a Humvee and drive across the United States and go to all these small towns and big cities that are contributing men and women, fathers and sons and wives and mothers and children to go fight this miserable occupation? Why don't you go into the gymnasiums and the civic groups and say, look, there's no way we're going to win this, but we need some more dead people. Come on, America, give us your sons and daughters. While the clown, the monkey boy, is dancing around over in Vietnam, this four-star general freak is sitting in front of the United States Senate, spinning his web of death and deceit and destruction. No, we're not. No, we can't. Bow. You want to hear some of it? You got some of it, Kathy? Let's do the first one here. This is Senator Lindsey Graham interviewing another four-star coward. Here it is.
Encouraging when in broad daylight.
Okay, let's get this first one. Okay, you ready? All right, this is Senator Lindsey Graham asking General Abbasid a question.
do we need more American troops at the moment to quell the violence?
No, I do not believe that more American troops right now is the solution to the problem.
Do we need less American troops?
I believe that the troop levels need to stay where they are. We need to put more American capacity into Iraqi units to make them more capable in their ability to confront the sectarian problem.
So it's your testimony that we don't need any change in troop levels to get this right?
It is possible that we might have to go up in troop levels in order to increase the number of forces that go into the Iraqi security forces. But I believe that's only temporary.
If we withdrew troops to Okinawa, would that be a good idea?
No.
If we withdrew troops to Kuwait, would that be a good idea?
Not at this stage in the campaign.
Well, people in South Carolina come up to me in increasing numbers and suggest that no matter what we do in Iraq, the Iraqis are incapable of solving their own problems through the political process and will resort to violence, and we need to get the hell out of there. What do you say?
I say the Iraqis are capable of fighting for their country, solving their political problems, and bringing their country towards stability with our help and support.
Well, then, General, why haven't they done so already? Jesus, God, I hate to be the skunk at the picnic, but what an elementary question! But I'm getting confused. If Abizaid says we have enough troops there now, and that the Iraqis are capable of defending themselves, then what's the reason we're still there? Hasn't Rumsfeld been telling us, telling the American, crippled American news media for years now that everything was going fine, that the troop levels were sufficient, that democracy was just around the corner? Why are we still there? To keep the oil in the ground and control the market? To build permanent military bases in the midst of the Mideast? To have a huge, expensive, half-billion-dollar U.S. embassy? These people can't be honest. They can't be honest. They can't say we're not creative enough to come up with alternative forms of energy. So this is our plan for the next 20 years. We're going to set up military bases so that we can just bomb and strafe and murder and kill anybody who tries to get near the Caspian Sea oil basin. No, they can't do that. Everybody's floating, but you tell me. More from General Abizaid when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today?
We are redefining war on our terms.
10 before the hour. Now that Abramoff is in prison, how long do you think it'll be before, this is just an aside, we're going back to Abizaid, how long before the swift boating of Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid will begin? I'm sure the pig man has already, Limbaugh, the pig man, has already got his program for tomorrow lined up. Abramoff is saying, oh, yeah, well, Reid was dirty, too. God, I hate these people. Oh. Next up, John McCain, another future Republican presidential candidate. McCain, questioning General John Abizaid, had this to say about the discrepancy between Abizaid's claims that there are enough troops in Iraq and the generals on the ground who say they need more. McCain says, did you note that General Zinni, who opposed the invasion now, thinks that we should have more troops? Did you note that General Zinni, who opposed the invasion, now thinks that we should have more troops? Did you notice that General Batiste, who is opposed to the conduct of this conflict, also says it may take tens of thousands of additional troops? I don't understand, General, when you have a key part of Iraq that's not under our control, and yet I don't know how many Americans' lives have been sacrificed in Al Anbar province, and yet Ramadi, Fallujah, and we still don't have enough, and we will rely on the ability to train the Iraqi military when the Iraqi army hasn't sent the number requested, hasn't sent the requested number of battalions into Baghdad. How can you say we have enough troops there if we don't control any of the key areas?
Senator McCain, I met with every divisional commander, General Casey, the Corps commander, General Dempsey. We all talked together, and I said, in your professional opinion, if we were to bring in more American troops now, does it add considerably to our ability to achieve success in Iraq? And they all said no.
So we have sufficient number of forces to clear insurgent sanctuaries, hold the territory with a combination of coalition and Iraqi forces, provide sufficient security in Iraq so that economic reconstruction and political activity can take place, to arrest the momentum of sectarian death squads, disarm militias, to train the Iraqi army and keep an American presence in Iraqi units, and place U.S. personnel in Iraqi police units. We have sufficient troops to carry out all those tasks.
We have sufficient troop strength, Iraqi and American, to make those tasks become effective.
What the hell does that mean? To make those tasks become effective. And by the way, General, if we do, then what's stopping everything? Oh, that's right, the car bombs. And finally tonight, John McCain had this to say about Abizade's earlier remark that he was encouraged by the current situation in Iraq. You got to wonder, what would be discouraging in Iraq? But listen to the very end of Abizade's statement, or his answer here, because the entire bloody story of Iraq is summed up in his final sentence.
Was it encouraging when in the broad daylight yesterday or the day before that people dressed in police uniforms are able to come in and kidnap 150 people and leave with them and go through checkpoints? General, it's not encouraging to us. It's not encouraging to those of us who heard time after time that things are, quote, progressing well, that we're making progress, etc., because we're hearing from many other sources that that's not the case. And I'm, of course, disappointed that basically you're advocating the status quo here today, which I think the American people in the last election said that is not an acceptable condition.
Well, Senator, I agree with you. The status quo is not acceptable. And I don't believe what I'm saying here today is the status quo.
It's not?
I am saying we must significantly increase our ability to help the Iraqi army by putting more American troops with Iraqi units in military transition teams to speed the amount of training that is done, to speed the amount of heavy weapons that gets there, and to speed the ability of Iraqi troops to deploy. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. We can put in 20,000 more Americans tomorrow and achieve a temporary effect. But when you look at the overall American force pool that's available out there, the ability to sustain that commitment is simply not something that we have right now with the size of the Army and the Marine Corps.
There it is. There it is. In that statement, General Abizade just made the confession. How many people heard that? That we can not win, operate much longer in this condition, or control the ebb and flow of this violent sectarian civil war. There he said it. The ability to sustain that commitment is simply not something that we have right now with the size of the Army and the Marine Corps. And there's the rub. This filthy, disgusting Rumsfeld didn't send in enough troops in their little game at the get-go to complete the PNAC crowd's murderous ambitions and Dim Sun's edible bloodlust for Saddam. And now that so many of our troops are fighting and dying in Iraq and Afghanistan, there aren't any more to send into the meat grinder. And recruitment numbers are down. I wonder why. My God, when you listen to these people, these generals, what are they talking about? What war? What country? They sit there and parrot the line that comes out of the Bush crime family. Oh, everything's encouraging. Even right-wingers like Lindsey Graham and John McCain more or less say to these generals, are you out of your freaking minds? What are you talking about? Which raises the question that John Kerry raised 40 years ago. How do you ask an American soldier to be the last person to die for a mistake? All right, I'll do some deep breathing and we'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. Imperi 2 sent me an email during the break. It says, hey, Mike, we have to keep in mind that the neocon men don't see Iraq as a failure. They have gotten everything they've wanted. A continuous state of war has allowed them to pass legislation that potentially makes America into a police state that would make Stalin blush. While everyone is concentrating on the war, they've been able to transfer trillions in wealth from the middle class to their cronies. They have become so wealthy at our expense that no monarch ever has wielded such power. If the bloodlust shocks and disgusts you, hold on tight, because they will have no choice but to up the ante to hang on to their ill-gotten gains. Yeah. Yeah. This from the Washington Post. After denying it for years, the CIA has formally acknowledged the existence of two classified documents that laid out the terms and conditions of what is referred to as aggressive interrogation in certain circles. You and I would call it torture. And the detention policies for people suspected of terrorism. Now, people suspected of terrorism is a catch-all phrase. It means anybody that the Bush crime family scoops up anywhere on the planet for any reason whatsoever. The ACLU has finally gotten a couple of documents that they've been seeking and that the CIA has been saying for years didn't exist. Now, the two documents I'm talking about here, CIA lawyers say these documents. One is a memo from George W. Bush, and the other is from the Justice Department, Ashcroft, and then Gonzalez, are still so sensitive that no portion can be released to the public. What that means is it will show that Ashcroft and or Gonzalez and George W. Bush have committed war crimes, crimes against humanity, crimes for which they should be arrested and tried. Screw impeachment! The Post reports that the disclosure by the CIA General Counsel's Office came in a letter last Friday to attorneys for the ACLU. ACLU had filed a lawsuit in district court in New York 2 years ago under the Freedom of Information Act, seeking records that relate to how the Bush crime family and Alberto Gonzalez and John Yoo and John Ashcroft and the rest of these murderous bastards, how they decided to implement interrogation, torture, and detention policies. But see, we're not supposed to know about that. We're supposed to go on continuing to believe that when we all sit down for our Thanksgiving dinner today, that mommy and daddy love us and the world is fine. And when we finish gorging ourselves, we'll walk out the front door, open the picket fence gate, and go for a nice stroll through the town square and say hi to everybody. That's what we're supposed to believe.
In other words, that we only torture turkeys by force-feeding them in little pens for years to fatten them up.
Well, that's not exactly what I meant, but that's okay. Now, this lawsuit by the ACLU has resulted in the release of more than 100,000 pages of documents, including some that revealed the internal debates in the Bush crime family over the torture policies at Guantanamo and other detention facilities that cannot be named. But we have a gulag now. We are the Soviet Union speckled throughout with Nazis. We have a gulag. We have detention centers where people are taken and tortured. Jesus, God! Friday's letter from the CIA's Associate General Counsel lists two documents pertain to the ACLU's records request. The ACLU describes the first document as a directive signed by Bush governing torture. The CIA's counsel describes the same document as a memorandum, not a directive. Oh, really? Maybe a court in The Hague could decide that at Bush's war crimes trial, whether it is a directive or a memorandum. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, words have consequences, don't they? Huh? The second document is an August 2002 legal memo from the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel to the CIA General Counsel. The ACLU describes it as, quote, specifying interrogation methods that the CIA may use. In other words, how to torture. From the Justice Department of the United States of America! How to torture. Amrit Singh, one of the ACLU attorneys on the case, said these disclosures may make it easier for the group ACLU to argue in favor of releasing more documents that will also be withheld from the general public because they are so sensitive. They are so filled with wording and suggestions and directives and ideas and phrasing and conversations that will make you and I hang our heads in shame until we die for what this Bush crime family has done. Singh said, referring to the group's initial document request in October 2003, quote, for more than 3 years, the CIA has refused to even confirm or deny the existence of these records. The fact that they're now choosing to do so confirms that their position was unjustified from the start. From Bush himself, from Alberto Gonzalez, from John Yoo, from John Ashcroft, from Dick Cheney, from Donald Rumsfeld. Every one of these people should be arrested and tried for war crimes. And I ask you, if you have an objection to that, on what is your objection based? On what? Every single thing that the Bush crime family has involved this country in for the past 6 years has been based on lies. Whether they're foreign or domestic, it matters not to these evil pigs. Lies. So who is it? Who's going to be the last American soldier or Marine to die for these evil, evil people's lies? Who's it going to be? Is it going to be your son, your cousin, your daughter, your mom, your dad? Who's it going to be? Come on, America! Let's have a lottery. Maybe Fox News can turn the drum. Give everybody a number. And the winner, quote, gets to be the last human being of American nationality to die for the lies of this Bush crime family. You want to get in the lottery? Huh? You want to? Let's put the Bush twins in there. Let's put the sons and daughters of every single member of Congress, Democrat and Republican. You know, the Democrats don't want to, we can't just pull out. Okay, you evil sons of bitches, let's put Chelsea Clinton in there along with the Bush twins. Let's get them all in! Would that be fair? Huh? Would that be fair? War crimes. Crimes against humanity. But impeachment is off the table. Impeachment is off the table. Last thing here, and then we're going to take some phone calls. This was a BuzzFlash editorial, or a BuzzFlash news analysis, went up today. It says, President Bush's upcoming visit to Vietnam bolsters comparisons between the Iraq and Vietnam wars, the AP reported today. Since Bush was too busy partying during the original conflict, hopefully the trip will be a good first lesson on the effects and solutions to stupid, hopeless wars. Bush recently said, quote, the only way we lose in Iraq is if we leave before the job is done, end quote. By that logic, he should redeploy our soldiers back to Vietnam to stay the old course and finish the job there. Of course, there are a few obvious differences between the wars in Iraq and Vietnam, but their deep similarities make the comparison a relevant one. As proof, consider the Bush administration's awkward dismissal of the debate as reported by the Associated Press. Stephen Hadley, the president's national security advisor, said a key difference is that the stakes are higher with Iraq. Hadley said, I remember debate about what would happen if the United States left Vietnam, and there were discussions about dominoes, some which fell and some which didn't fall. But nobody, I think, Hadley continued, felt that it would result in a clear and present danger to the territory of the United States, end quote. Well, you lying, ignorant son of a bitch, we were told if we didn't fight them in the streets of Saigon, we would fight them in the streets of San Diego. Oh, I love this song.
No American will be allowed to torture another human being anywhere in the world.
The evil bastard said that. And now we have the ACLU has proof that he signed a directive laying out the parameters within which torture could occur. I did not have sex with that woman. I'll impeach him! Back to the BuzzFlash. I sometimes I don't know whether to scream or go mad. I really don't. Back to the BuzzFlash editorial that was put up today, or as they call it, news analysis. Stephen Hadley trying to differentiate between Iraq and Vietnam. Stephen Hadley, another one of these neocon cowardly little bastards who no more would serve in a military unit than he would run naked through the halls of Congress. Well, maybe he'd do that. I don't know about Hadley. He said nobody, I think, felt that it would result, the Vietnam conflict, in a clear and present danger to the territory of the United States, which is an absolute filthy lie, or this pig doesn't even know history from 35 years ago. Anyone who was... Well, back to the BuzzFlash editorial. Anyone who was alive during the Cold War remembers the very real threat of nuclear annihilation that the Vietnam War was supposed to minimize. We did not pull out from Vietnam because people thought it was unimportant. We left because our objectives proved impossible, and people were dying needlessly. They were dying needlessly for the last 4 years. Americans and Vietnamese. The same is true for Iraq. As BuzzFlash says, just about everyone would rather we accomplished our revised mission and Iraq became a peaceful democracy. But again, our strategic objectives have proved impossible and people are dying needlessly. The irony of Vietnam, BuzzFlash writes, is that peace, not war, has over time turned the nation into an ally that our president can visit to sightsee and discuss trade. Only by withdrawing our troops was this possible. That wall in D.C. tonight with the 58,000-59,000 names on it, that wall is undulating and shaking the earth. And lightning bolts are flashing from the face of that wall. And there is a moaning and a retching coming from those 58,000 names. And the ground is shaking. Because every single name on that wall was unnecessary. And now this piglet of a president who no more would have gone to Vietnam during that conflict than he would have stopped taking cocaine, travels to Vietnam. This evil, mindless demagogue travels to Vietnam, and that wall in D.C. is shuddering tonight. And if you and I were standing there in the darkness and the rain, I guarantee you would hear the anguished moans of 58,000 people saying, "Oh, you son of a bitch." And Stephen Hadley tries to say, "Well, there's no threat to the United territory of the United States, you know." And there is with Iraq, there is with insurgents, with people who are hell bent on taking over Iraq and just want us to get the hell out. That's all Vietnam wanted. Get out! Stop killing us! Stop poisoning our country! Get out! Raus! Raus! Raus mit du! And here we are again. All right, let's do some phone calls. I've tossed enough garbage up here on the Malloy stage tonight to kick around. Again, if there is a single right-winger, a single conservative listening to this program anywhere in the United States, and you can call in and put together a coherent sentence and justify anything about the operations of the Bush crime family, we certainly welcome your call. But be forewarned, I will not tolerate any nonsense. The number is 800-989-1480. Your calls when we come back.
For the sake of peace in this world, the United States must maintain every advantage in weaponry.
And the war for oil. Do you think the sun's...
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You and I have been listening to that nonsense all our lives, haven't we? Oh, and keep in mind that McCain's questioning of General Abizaid today that sounded critical of Abizaid. It was critical of Abizaid, but remember what McCain wants. McCain wants more death and more destruction. He wants more troops to go fight the kind of war that he was forced to fight that resulted in his being held as a prisoner and tortured. McCain's mind is gone. And the older he gets, the more he is reverting to some sort of revenge against his own country. I was tortured, seems to be McCain's rationale, so torture's okay. I was taken prisoner, so taking prisoners is okay. I was forced to bomb and kill people, so bombing and kill people is okay. That's the only way McCain can justify his war crimes. So McCain's apparent critical questioning of Abizaid today was not that at all, if you take it from the standpoint of let's get the hell out. His critical questioning was from the standpoint of let's continue to pour more American blood on the sand of Iraq and let's continue to burn more Iraqi civilians. That's what McCain had his bloomers in a wad about. He wants more death and destruction. Pour more lives and resources into a war that cannot be won by the United States under any circumstances. We have lost that war. We lost that war the day we unleashed shock and awe 4 years ago. That's the day we lost. The question is not, how do we come home in victory? The question is, how do we come home? How do we get our people out? And which one of us is going to be the last American to die for a lie? Oh my God, sitting there today listening to these right wingers, Warner and Graham and McCain and Hillary Clinton. Okay. 800-989-1480 is the number we have in open line, so bring it on. Kevin is calling from Daytona. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, it's Kevin. I just want to point out, well, two things if you would indulge me. You notice the garbage out that has come back into our Senate, into our lives, Trent Lott?
Oh, yeah. Isn't that astonishing?
No, no.
Well, I guess it isn't.
Well, you know, the black conservatives, which are out there, and it's a disease amongst the black community which has to go. How blind can they be? You know, the Michael Steeles, you know, the Condoleezza Rices. This is what the party thinks of you.
Yeah, that's true.
The Clarence, you know, to me, if I was a black Republican, I would look upon this as a slap in the face. I really would.
Well, it's not just Trent Lott, although he is the most obvious racist pig. Let's not forget what he said at Strom Thurmond's 120th birthday party or whatever the hell it was before that old bastard stepped off this mortal coil. But it's also Mitch McConnell, this thug from Kentucky, who is now the second in command or the first in command. He is the Senate Minority Leader. Mitch McConnell is as much of a racist as Trent Lott is. It's just that Mitch McConnell has learned how to keep his racism a little bit more quiet. But all these white Southern men who all of a sudden are once again coming back into power, that's what the Republican Party is about.
Yeah. And, you know, I just don't get it. I really... You know, I know it's a form of self-hatred, just like the disease that Preacher, you know, it's a form of self-hatred.
It is indeed.
You know, a lot of black conservatives hate the fact that, you know, because they've been so beaten over the head that the only reason why you got where you're at because of affirmative action by a lot of these hate mongers.
That's right.
You know, but they don't seem to understand the reason why affirmative action came into place is because, and I try to explain this to a lot of, you know, black conservatives, is that, you know, a black kid could grow up in Scarsdale or, you know, Beverly Hills.
Right.
The playing field will still not be even.
That's right.
Because the thing is, the average white kid who grow up in the very same neighborhood, money is not, it's the social contact, the generations of advantages, right? George W., whose ancestors went to Yale, and, you know, who are so deeply entrenched.
Well, that's why people, yeah, that's why people, affirmative action, it's called a legacy arrangements where they can get into these exclusive schools. And nobody talks about legacy entry into college. They all talk about affirmative action. The hypocrisy is just stunning. It's just stunning.
Okay. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to point it out, you know, I'm a big believer of history. And if history is any indication, you know, and I always look upon England as being the what goes on in England 20, 30 years before eventually hits the United States.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, you need not worry. America will become a socialist country or a more, you know, social economic country like England, Sweden, Holland. It's just, and I think this election is the beginning of it.
Well, one can hope. One can hope. Kevin, let me move on. Thanks a lot, pal. I got to move on. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Democratic socialism, to me, carries some real promise. I mean, it really does. Haven't we proven here since the Industrial Revolution, and it wasn't that long ago, what was it, less than 200 years ago, the Industrial Revolution, now haven't we proven that capitalism is by definition a destructive system for the vast majority of people? Unbridled capitalism. I'm not talking about capitalism with heavy-duty restrictions placed on it, but I don't think we've ever had that. You know, you can go back to General Smedley Butler, the only American Marine, only American military man to win two Congressional Medals of Honor. Go back to his writings about what he saw as the function of the United States military, and that was to protect capitalist thugs globally, to steal and pillage and take whatever they wanted to take. Democratic socialism, Bernie Sanders. Sanders is a senator, right? The new senator, Bernie Sanders, who describes himself as a democratic socialist. Oh, I know, the S word. Oh, my God, not socialism. Oh, my God, not that. Hillary Clinton. Jesus. Hasn't capitalism proven that it doesn't give a damn about the family? It doesn't give a damn about working people? It doesn't give a damn about making a living? Unions were the ones that demanded organized labor. Is the organization that demanded a living wage? It wasn't capitalists never said, oh, we're going to pay our workers a decent amount of money. Oh, I know. Henry Ford, the American Nazi, who said, well, you know, I'm going to start paying $5 a day because I like my workers to be able to buy my cars. Think about that for a second. Democratic socialism. Maybe that is the answer. Capitalism has proven that it is rapacious. It is immoral. It is unethical. It stops at nothing, and it's dividing this country. In my lifetime, I have watched the differential between executive pay and the pay of workers on the plant floor go from a factor of 43 to a factor of 440. The average executive pay now is 400-plus times the amount of money of the average worker. When I was a teenager, the average executive made 40 times the average worker. You cannot sustain that kind of disparity in income and not eventually have a revolution. And that's being talked about again now by a leading American economist. I can't think of his name. I don't know where the article appeared, but it just came out once again. And as this disparity increases, eventually the people who are fed these images on television of what the good life consists of, and it's always outside their grasp. It's always just, I just can't quite, eventually, as they watch their jobs move overseas, and their incomes deteriorate, and their children can't get educated, and their health care is not affordable, eventually those people take up weapons and say, I've had enough of this. Back to your phone calls in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. 10 before the hour, back to your phone calls. Leonard is calling from Glendale, Arizona. Leonard, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mr. Malloy. You are the closest thing that I've heard to Thomas Paine. And I'm not saying that to flatter you. I really like the way Nova Network is coming along. We've got Dr. Newcomb and Jeff in the morning. And then basically at night I hear you talking, and I basically closely subscribe to what you're saying, not because, you know, I'm just thinking out of rage. I mean, you come through concisely and clearly with the reasons for why Bush should be impeached. And even now you've outdone me. You're, you know, the war crime thing, even though I thought about that, that's still, that's great. I mean, but the thing is, what I called about was here in Arizona where I'm from, you know, I was born here and lived here all my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen McCain, and I, you know, basically I thought McCain had really, his political career was ended with the Keating Five. This guy is basically just goes with the wind. He is setting himself up for president. He knows that his party now is not going to have to really make the hard decisions about Iraq, but they'll be able to stand by the side and see just like the generals did after the end of World War One, the German generals, you know, the politicians betrayed us.
Yeah.
And, he, you know, Bill Bennett, he was on his show yesterday. I heard him saying, hey, yes, we're going to have to send more troops over. And then Bennett asking, well, how are we going to do that? And he's saying, well, we'll have to, you know, unfortunately, I know the folks aren't going to like this. Just keep sending the National Guard back over and over again in the military.
God.
Yeah, and this guy is clearly playing the pure political card to get himself as president. I think the way the people in Arizona, the activists here in Arizona, need to let him know we have not forgotten at least one of the many things. I call him the Neville Chamberlain of American jurisprudence now, because I saved habeas corpus. He comes out of the room with the paper in his hand, smiling. See, I did it, you know. But he didn't. And even the right wingers here in Arizona, I hear their programs, they can't stand him. So he's clearly going to go for the independent vote here, and the people who buy drink the Kool-Aid. So the guy just really, really. He wants to fight Vietnam all over again. How dare he? You know, we're the ones who have to keep going to Iraq.
Yeah.
The middle class, the working class, these kids here want to pay for their college now. You know, and they don't realize when they sign up, they're signing away their lives now. So I just called up to say thank you. You know, night after night, you do this, and you state it so clearly and concisely. The Bush crime family, I'm just sick and tired of hearing, you know, I know, well, we got to get along now with them. You know what? If we take this mandate that the American people have given us through this election and we continue to act wishy-washy, by we, I mean the Democratic Party, you know, I understand we just can't go out and lynch him, but the evidence is there. So if we pass that up again, they are also, we're going to pass up our chance and their trust in us, and then we're really going to be hurt. So thanks a lot, Mr. Malloy, and please keep up the great work there. I still think the government's got its little plans for people like us, but I'm waiting for him. That's all I can say. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Leonard. Appreciate you checking in. Just a couple of things. Just call me Mike. A. B. The ideas that I express on this program are no different. Well, as you just said, Leonard, they're no different from yours. The only difference between you and me is I have the microphone. That's all. And it's Mike. Do we need a little Busta Rhymes right here? Yeah, we've got time to do it.
Daddy, what's it gonna be like?
Well, sweetheart, for your sake, I hope it'll be all peaches and cream. But I'm afraid the end time is near. The cataclysmic apocalypse referred to in the scriptures of every holy book known to mankind. It will be an era fraught with boundless greed and corruption, where global monetary systems disintegrate, leaving brother to kill brother for a grain of overcooked rice. The nations of the civilized world will collapse under the oppressive weight of parasitic political conspiracies which remove all hope and optimism from their once faithful citizens. Around the globe, generations of polluters will be punished for their sins, unshielded by the ozone layer they have successfully depleted, left to bake in the searing naked rays of light. Wholesale assassination served to destabilize every remaining government, leaving the starving and wicked to fend for themselves. Bloodthirsty renegade cyborgs created by tax-dodging corporations wreak havoc. Pissed-off androids tired of being slaves to a godless and gutless system where the rich get richer, unleash total worldwide destruction by means of nuclear holocaust, annihilating the terrified masses, leaving in its torturous wake nothing but vicious, cannibalistic, mutated, radiated, and horribly disfigured hordes of satanic killers, bent on revenge, but against whom there are so few left alive. Starvation reigns supreme, forcing unlucky survivors to eat anything and anyone in their path. Massive earthquakes crack the planet's crust like a hollow eggshell, causing unending volcanic eruptions. The creatures of the seven seas, unable to escape to certain death upon land, boil in their liquid prison. Disease encircles the earth. Plagues and viruses with no known cause or cure, laying waste to whatever draws breath. And humankind, having proven itself to be nothing more than a race of ruthless scavengers, fall victim to merciless attack at the hands of interplanetary alien tribes who seek to conquer our charred remains. This is Extinction Level Event.
Wow, that's cool. I can't hardly wait.
You don't have to, because here it is. Because here it is. Because here it is. Because here it is.
Every once in a while, I've got to hear that. Now, before you email me and say, where can I get it, let me just tell you, just do a Google on Extinction Level Event, and you can download it. Man, that's creepy. It's still creepy now. I've heard it about 1,000 times. Busta Rhymes. All right, quick break. We shall return for the final hour of the program tonight. Back to your phone calls. And we still have an open line. Is that one idle or is that one always open? Well, you can fill it up by dialing 800-989-1480. All right, stick around. More fun and frivolity. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. My name is Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. We're in the final hour here. Two emails. On every time I try to get cool and slick and do something in a foreign language, I screw it up. So, what?
I thought you were just speaking in tongues or something. I had no idea what you were saying.
A few minutes ago, and I said, Raus mit du. It's German, only it's not correct German. So Bob in Miami writes in, I know this isn't important, trivial, and ridiculous in light of the discussion you and your listeners have been having for years. However, it's Raus mit dir, if singular, and mit ihnen, if plural. Every time I hear that, I can't help but think of the phrase, Al Juden raus, gives this old Jew the creeps. I've seen the tattoos. Bob in Miami. And Reg over at TV News Lies, who is beginning to remind me of my fifth grade geography teacher, who used to walk around with a heavy-duty pointer made out of wood, and when we couldn't identify Norway as opposed to Sweden, the pointer would come down. Reg writes in with the German lesson, Heraus mit dir, not du. All right, thanks, Bob, and thanks, Reg. No, I appreciate it. I try to be cool sometimes and do something a little bit over my head, and I've got a cadre of people out there who crack the whip and make sure that I come back and correct it, which is the way it should be. No, wait a second. No, it shouldn't. I never make mistakes. I'm going to change the policy at all. It's raus mit du. No. And I shouldn't be shrieking German into the microphone anyway. All right. Or any language for that matter. I have enough trouble with English, frankly. Back to your phone calls. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge, welcome to the program.
Hello there, sprechen Sie Deutsch.
Apparently, no. not even a little.
You know, you were talking about the capitalism, regulated capitalism, and the difference between top price or top salary and the rest of the folks.
Right.
I don't know what her first name is, but when Mrs. Welsh got pissed off at Bill Welsh after he retired from General Electric and sued him for divorce, mm-hmm. Do you remember some of the perks that son of a gun got?
Yeah, I do. Just horrifying stuff.
I mean, he could walk into a gift shop at Martha's Vineyard and charge every thing he bought to the office. And he hadn't been working there for 6 months. I mean,
That is so galling. There's no difference between Mr. Welsh and somebody who assembled parts in a Ford Motor Company plant in somewhere in the suburbs of Detroit. The only difference between the two, they're both Americans. They're both male in the instance I'm using. They're probably both white in the instance I'm using. And yet, Mr. Welsh, by virtue of the fact that he did what? Was making hundreds of millions of dollars a year.
Why was he ever?
And the shop worker in Detroit would be lucky to make 70 grand a year. So with all the benefits.
No
so
kidding.
I don't know.
The reason I called, dear heart, on the electric radio this afternoon, I heard one Tommy Thompson. Remember him, former governor of Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah.
And secretary of Health and Human Services?
Yes.
That's when they still had that department. I don't think they call it that anymore.
I don't think they do, no.
Anyhow, he was talking about his, he was the author, he claimed, or one of the designers of Medicare Part D.
Uh-huh.
Well.
Is that the prescription drug plan?
Yeah.
Yeah, how's that going?
Fine, according to him.
Well, that's...
You know,
yeah,
that
exactly.
They had many more drug companies willing to partake in that, and that's what caused all the confusion, because there was all this competition, don't you know?
Well, and the odd part was, what's the competition about? Since Medicare can't make bulk purchases and the prices are set by the pharmaceutical companies, where's the competition?
Well, you know... the VA only controls about 8% of the drugs, where Medicare would be 42%, and that would be sort of like price control. I'm quoting him.
Right.
But the thing that I wanted to get out that I don't know that a lot of people are aware of, at least I was until I heard him say it. Of course, I could be living under a rock. I don't know. Usually, you know, if Medicare kicks in when you turn 65 and you get this nice little red, white, and blue card in the mail, and you got to hang on to that for dear life so you don't lose it.
Uh-huh.
And I just assumed that now that they had part A and B, and now they added part D, that it would all be included. Wrong.
Not true, huh?
Not true. See, open enrollment for people who are going to turn 65 next year is now, right now, today, till the 31st of December.
You mean everybody who's 64 right now must go sign up now or they miss out on it?
That's right. Until whatever they decide next year is going to be another open enrollment period. So, I mean, you know, if If you're 64 now and you turn 65 in February and the next year's open enrollment is not until August, you're screwed.
I got you. I got you. Well, that's another reason to hate these people.
I mean, they're so well organized, right?
Well, the only answer I can give to that is something I said earlier tonight. Marge, you may not have heard it, but when it was announced that Bush was going to Vietnam, the White House website put up a flag from 1975. It was the flag of South Vietnam and North Vietnam that unified the country, and it's now Vietnam, uses a flag with a huge star in the middle of it. And to put up a flag like that and say it represents United Vietnam would be like putting up a Confederate flag and saying it represents the United States, or a Nazi flag and saying it represents Germany. So even, and that happened just the other day. So not only can they not get Medicare or anything right, they can't even put the right flag symbol up for the former communist country Bush is going to. Finally, he's going to Vietnam.
God, these people. And you're talking about the war crimes. I assume that you saw where somebody from Abu Ghraib had lawyers file a lawsuit in Germany against Rumsfeld.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But this thing with Medicare, I mean, my God, you can't assume that anything that they're doing makes any sense. But I don't know who the hell would know to ask if they're, you know, they figure, well, I'm not going to be 65 until next year. Mm-hmm. So, I'll just get it all when it kicks in. Sorry, Charlie.
Yeah, it's just an outrage. This stuff doesn't have to be this complicated. It really doesn't. But it's designed to be complicated, just like filing an insurance claim is designed to be complicated. A medical insurance claim, health insurance claim, is designed to the whole system is set up to deny you the claim. The Medicare Part D is set up to deny you your medicine. It's a wonder that Medicare itself is not set up to deny you medical care that is that anyone of the 65 and older is entitled to by acts of Congress, by funding with our tax dollars. I hate these people, Marge, with a depth of hatred that if I were Catholic, the priest would say, you better get rid of that, my son.
Oy, Gavalt, these people are maddening. I mean, they are such scumbums, it's beyond belief. But
It is indeed.
It's crazy.
All right.
One last thing.
Yes,
it's total mind candy. It's got nothing to do with anything except those of us who used to watch the stupid stuff on the TNV.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, Luke and Laura are going to renew their vows after 25 years.
Luke and Laura who?
Oh, God.
Wait, here comes Kathy. Hold on a second. Here she comes, Marge. Here she comes.
Marge, you're wasting your time talking anything soapy with Mike.
Oh, it's a soap
just
opera?
So you know.
Well, like I said, it's a renewal of 25 years ago. I haven't watched them lately, but I caught wind of it that it's going to be tomorrow. So I thought, well, one day I'd go back.
How old is Lucky now?
Oh, God. Well, if he's going to be father... So I guess he's old enough, you know.
I cannot believe how long it's been since I've watched General Hospital. And I just pulled that name out of my head.
I think we're sort of leaving Mike in the background here.
You ever watch Days?
Pardon?
Days of Our Lives? That was my
show.
Oh,
okay. No, okay. That was a different channel. No, I was always on ABC, that bunch. He's gonna get us.
This is for you, Mark.
See you, Marge. Thanks for checking in.
Take care.
All right.
Nation where the dictator treated himself to palaces with gold faucets, gold-covered AK-47s.
21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Kate is calling from Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Kate.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Doing fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. We've got high winds and heavy rain here, so I can't listen to you on the computer this evening.
Same kind of day we had here in Atlanta, Georgia. High winds and heavy rains. Must be that damn global warming. Oh, wait a minute. That's not happening. That's right.
I think it's called winter.
that could be it, yeah.
Boy, we've missed you so much. I made so many notes. We were talking about, you were talking about socialist, democratic socialist and conservative. Mm-hmm. I'd like to be known as a responsible country. How about that?
There's a unique idea, or an excellent idea. A responsible country.
With responsible citizens, you know, because if we're responsible to each other, it'll take care of a lot of things.
Yeah, somebody told me one time responsible only means able to respond, and I wish that's what we were about. But
and one other thing, every time I hear Rumsfeld when he was retiring the other day, he was talking about the first war of the 21st century. Every time I hear that, I want to break things.
Yeah.
It should be the last war of the 21st century, you know.
We
need to be beyond this.
When I heard Bush first use that term, when he was trying to equate himself with Winston Churchill, after I calmed down my gag reflex, I just thought to myself, you know, how can these evil bastards start a brand new century with a war?
Hey, thank you.
You know,
thank
after
you.
The 20th century, arguably the bloodiest century in the history of the human race.
And the greediest.
And the greediest, and here we're going to do it again. And Bush stands up there mocking everything that's just and decent and peaceable, and calls it the first war of the 21st century. I've just had my belly full of these people.
Thank you. I'm with you. And you were talking about the gag reflex. The Clinton impeachment managers, that McConnell, he was one of those guys, and Hutchins and Lott, it just, I will not be happy until every one of those guys is out of there. You know?
Oh, they're just such. I don't know. I mean, I am a white male, but when I look at these white people, these crackers, I do live in the South, and I look at these people like Mitch McConnell and Trent Lott and even Lindsey Graham and some of these other people.
Yeah, he was one of them too.
I can't be out of the same gene pool as these people. I just can't be. Impossible.
Well, I don't know how they're sitting there, how they're living with themselves, letting Bush get away with this when they, you know, we're up in arms over Clinton with the whole rule of law and all of that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
I'm so glad you guys are back on.
Kate, eventually, I think a station in Seattle, Tacoma, is going to pick up the program.
KPTK, yeah. They said 1090.
Yeah, it's
they
coming.
They said they're going to as soon as they get the logistics worked out.
Yeah, we're still nailing down the satellite uplink, and then it's going to be available on Seattle radio.
I cannot wait.
Too.
But I have to thank you, though. Because of you, I've learned to set up a satellite system at home, and I've learned to network my computer so that I can listen to it in the other room.
That's great. Thank you.
Your learning experience. Take care.
All right, you too. Thanks a lot for checking in. I appreciate it. Yeah, I think just a little inside information from Nova M Radio. I think they are working at the Phoenix station KPHX to affect this uplink to Westwood One satellite, I believe. And when that occurs, there are. And Kathy says, there'll be no stopping us. No, we will get back maybe 12 or 15 of the stations that we used to have when we were on Air America. So, we're looking forward to that for sure.
And some of them might even carry all 3 hours of the show and not preempt us.
Well, there's always local sports that has to be acknowledged. I mean, this is America. But look at San Francisco, the Quake carries us live now. And I think back in the day, we were either delayed or the entire program wasn't carried or whatever. And KQKE in San Francisco was at 960, is carrying the program live and all 3 hours of it. So that's we like that. All right, I'm sorry. Too much chatter from your humble and obedient servant. Your phone calls when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
And the shops who used to sell their brooms and mops and every other household item. Watch a mob just turn and bite them, and they say it served them right because a few of them were white. And it's the same across the nation, black and white discrimination. Yeah, and you can't understand me and all that other jazz they hand me in the papers and TV and all that mass stupidity that seems to grow more every day. It's time to hear something we say. You want to go and do your in.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. 26 before the hour. Let's go right back to your phone calls. Sarge is calling from Mississippi. Sarge, welcome to the program. Well, Trent Lott, they pulled the stake out of his heart and got him out of the coffin, and here he is again.
Yeah. Yeah, he's, well, it's a good thing he's going to do something. He sure hadn't done nothing for people during Katrina, so, you know, all that experience of doing nothing ought to pay off in that position.
Mm. Well, you know, the story is that they brought Trent Lott back because he's a negotiator and he knows everybody and he knows how to get things done. And now that, you know, it never would have happened except for the fact that Republicans are now in the minority in the Senate. But, I think I'm more freaked out by Mitch McConnell being the new Senate Minority Leader than Trent Lott being the whip?
Second.
I think it's the whip, yeah.
Number two man, whatever it is. But I tell you, Lott's just a chameleon. You know, whatever's in vogue, he kind of fades into it. That's how he survived all these years as a politician. He's about as real as a $4 bill. He's a fraud.
Yeah.
Listen, Mike, can I mention something about this young fellow over in Charlotte, North Carolina?
Sure, go ahead.
He's a two-year-old, and I heard about him on the Bob Kincaid show. And this poor child, he has spinal...
Spina bifida?
Bifida, thank you. I couldn't say the word. And he has really undergone some horrible times, and he went to a doctor in New York, and on the way home, board the plane in New York to get to Charlotte, they made him get rid of his medicine and his oxygen, wouldn't let him fly.
You're kidding me.
No, that's your government at work. This was back in September. And he lives in Charlotte, and the family's had people, you know, just your average working stiff, help him out, but... the rich people in Charlotte, the churches and stuff like that, said, "Oh, we can't do that. We had to spend all this money on those billboards and stuff. Yeah. Stop the gay marriage, you know."
Right.
And so they're trying to get all the help they can. And I was just going to say, if anybody wants to help them out, there's a website you can go to. Just go to my website, unreportednews.net. And click on, under Reporter's Blog, click on mine, and I got a link right at the top there you can go to and donate.
Okay, unreportednews.net, and then click on the old Sarge?
Right, Herb Sarge Phelps.
Okay, Herb Phelps or Sarge. All right, hopefully some people will do that.
Yeah, this is really a shame. The reason I found out about Bob, people don't want to Bob's regular listeners, and Bob hadn't heard from him in a while, and he checked him out and found out all about this. So, you know, I call the Charlotte Bobcats the NBA basketball team, and I've asked them to look into seeing about trying to help. Hopefully I'll hear something back from them. But
all right. Well, keep us posted, Sarge.
All righty. Thank you, Mike.
All right, sir. Appreciate it. You take care. He's talking about Bob Kincaid's Head On Radio Network, H-O-R-N. You can, if you don't already have it in your favorite places, just go to Google, do a search, H-O-R-N, Head On, as in collision, Radio Network, and check out Sarge's website. He has helped more people, Sarge has got. Remember the woman that called from the suburbs of Detroit? I don't mean suburbs in the sense of, oh, aren't we living great. A woman who was 65 had her power turned off. She called us on her cell phone from the darkness. She'd go to her girlfriend's house to charge up her cell phone. Jesus. And Sarah George organized a campaign and got her lights turned back on and the power restored, and which enabled her to go get some public assistance. And, I mean, Sarge does that. That's just what he does. Mike is calling from Phoenix. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you. First off, I come in peace. I'm not sure this is going to go well, but...
Well, you must be a conservative.
I am.
Are you a conservative, or are you a Bush? Are you a right winger?
I'm the real deal. Unlike that piece of trash in the White House, I've never voted for Bush.
Okay, all right. Well, then you and I can probably have a conversation. What's up?
Okay, good. I have to tell you, listening to you guys is like fingernails on a chalkboard. We're definitely on far sides of the Grand Canyon from one another.
All right, tell me an example where you and I totally differ.
Well, you seconded the comments of a caller of yours about socialism, the fact that it was on the way, and indeed it is British style socialism.
No, you're leaving out a modifier: democratic socialism. Now, if you don't know the difference, then you and I can't have a discussion. There is a massive difference. I'm not talking about communist style or Soviet style or Chinese style socialism. I'm talking about democratic socialism. There's a powerful difference. If you want an example of democratic socialism, look to the Scandinavian countries.
Well, yeah, which are failures as economies.
How are they failures? Says who?
No, wait.
See, this always happens.
Hold on.
I don't want to hang up on you. Hold on. Every time I get a conservative or a right winger on and you make a statement and I ask you to just back it up, how is Norway and Sweden and these Scandinavian countries, how are they failures? You're the one that said they're a failure. Where are they failing?
What are they doing?
They have the highest standard of living and the longest life expectancy of any society on earth. Where are they failing? You're the one that made the statement they're failing. Where?
They are unproductive. No,
they're not unproductive. Don't give me generalities. Either speak to me with facts or go away. What do you mean they are failing?
They do not produce. I mean, you don't have the great success stories. Everyone is dumbed down. Everyone is at the same
level. What are you talking about? They have the highest standards of education and health and life expectancy and the happiness index of any societies on earth.
What are
you talking about?
Merely because socialism has taken
Jesus.
Such a beating.
Look, all right, that's enough. Mike, hold on. Before I hang up, I'm just going to say that you know, I had some hope for your phone call. I thought maybe you were going to be able to make a statement and back it up with facts. When you wipe out, you just wiped out five or six countries in Europe that are doing fine with or without your criticism and probably don't give a damn what you think about their form of socialism. Just because you're not buying Scandinavian goods in your local grocery store doesn't mean that they're a failure. What the hell is wrong with you? I mean, what standard are you using to tell me they're failures? That's all I'm asking you, and you can't answer.
You hate capitalism. I've got that.
No, I've never said that. God damn it. All right, get him out of here. Goodbye, Mike. Don't ever call again. Goodbye. Get out of here. I never said that. I said I hate predatory capitalism. I'm not playing with you freaks. I'm not going to do it. When I say democratic socialism and you call in and say that I'm supporting socialism, you got one strike. When I say I'm against predatory capitalism and you tell me I'm against capitalism, then you got two and you're out of here. Two strikes, sucker, and you're gone. Don't you people play head trips with me, because you're not going to succeed. And once, because I control the dumb button, that's why. It's an unfair fight. I will get your ass out of here quicker than you can say you're a socialist lover, okay? You're gone. That's the nature of talk radio. Sorry, it's not fair. But I believe when somebody challenges me to a knife fight, I show up with a couple of guns. And in this case, it's the dump button, the almighty dump button. All I've ever asked you people to do is, when you call my program, say anything you want, but be prepared to back it up with facts, not Limbaugh-esque generalities or Bush lies. That's all I've ever asked you people. And you can't do it. You can't do it. Ever. The Scandinavian countries are a failure? Says who? Who in the hell told you that? When were you there? What do you know about them? Who is their leaders? What kind of government do they have? Name me one of their political parties. Tell me the names of their capitals. You don't know anything about Scandinavian countries. What you do know is the garbage that is tipped into your skull when Limbaugh steps on your toe and your head flies open. That's all you know. Jesus H. Christ, what's wrong with you right-wingers? Can't you ever, ever make a statement that is rational, logical, or true? Ever? The answer to that is no. Hell no.
We have a listener in Norway, and I just wonder, he sends us pictures of some of the most beautiful...
Their business. They have a business, a graphic design company.
Unbelievable.
Gee,
wonder...
Jacob
yeah,
Mattau.
Right. I just wonder how our Norwegian listeners would like to think that they're just a bunch of failures because they don't compete
yeah.
in Bush's free market.
Yeah, and they all live in igloos. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with... Oh, God!
Have you ever heard of the hard-to-get game? How can I miss you if you won't go away? I keep telling you day after day, but you won't listen. You always stay. How can I miss you if you won't go away? I mean it, too.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's More Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So my old geography teacher just wrote to me again, Reggie. She quotes something from, here. This is for this guy in Phoenix, Mike. The United Nations has identified Scandinavian countries for having the highest standard of living in the world! Norway, Denmark, Finland, and Iceland claim top ratings on the UN index because of their high levels of education, income, and public health, you moron! For the third consecutive year, Norway has topped the UN's Human Development Report, which rates countries by life expectancy, education, environment, and economy. All Scandinavian countries are in the top 15 countries in the world! While contributing the most per capita in foreign aid and enjoying the friendliest environmental policies. How can people be this stupid as that last caller? And if that's too complex for you, moron, here's a few words you might understand. IKEA, Saab, Volvo, Nokia. Do you know what those words mean, you jackass? Ah!
They're just a bunch of lazy automakers over there producing the safest automobile on the planet.
They're commies! They're socialist pigs! Good God! What do you want to bet that guy has never been out of the United States? Never! Unless he went to Cabo San Luca to lay on the beach and pretend like he's a world traveler.
I was going to lay a bet that he hadn't been out of his living room.
Jesus, God, I apologize for my language. I just go nuts when I get a more, I come in peace. I come in peace to your program, Mike. You ignorant freak. All of you right-wingers, can't you ever get anything right? Not one thing. Where does he think vowels are made? Jesus, God.
Probably in Detroit.
Thanks to the crew again tonight. If they're still in Phoenix at the home office, I would imagine our crew said, man, I'm out of here. This guy's out of his mind. But anyway, the program is engineered by Billy Foster. Ian Huff answered your calls. Kim Macias helped produce the program. Thanks to everybody there. Without whose help, we wouldn't be here. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, and the militant mobs at MikeMalloy.com. Thanks, everybody. Ben Birch, White Rose Society, archives the program, podcasting, and downloads of The Malloy Show. Now available, start at NovaMradio.com and follow the yellow brick road. Our executive producer is Catherine Bay. And people like that vote. I'm sure, I don't know. Maybe Mike in Phoenix doesn't vote. But how? How is that kind of ignorance, savage ignorance? How does that guy go from sunup to sundown? If he's that ignorant about the facts of Scandinavia, he brought it up, not me. If he is that ignorant about topics he brings up, imagine what a blank slate his mind is about everything else. No wonder the pig man has 7 million listeners a week. No wonder Hannity can sit there and pontificate, oh, boxhead. No wonder Michael Savage can, Christ. I just can't get that. Scandinavia is a failure. Okay. Back to your phone calls. Tiffany is calling from where? Sparks?
Sparks.
Is that, what state's that in, Tiffany?
Maryland.
Oh, hi, Tiffany. Welcome to the program.
Hey, tell them, Mike. Get them, girl. I love you.
I know. You've told me that before.
I'm glad you know who I am then. Hey, listen.
Oh, yeah.
A couple things, but quickly. One, I was working for Clint Curtis's campaign, and I tried to get through to Randy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have so much trust in Randy, but her people kept telling me they didn't know who he was. And when I talked to him, he said, you know, I've been talking to them for a year, and if they don't want to, they don't know who I am, it's because they don't want to know who I am. Your comments on that, you know, after I hang up, whatever. Second, I'm looking at the net neutrality bill.
No. Wait. Just a second. Stephanie. Randy, you talk about Randy Rhodes?
Yes, sir.
That's a woman.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you said he. You can't.
I'm sorry. I made a mistake.
Oh, okay. I'm just getting confused. I'm going, wait a minute. What,
that's
Randy?
Okay.
All right,
I'm trying to be quick, and I confused you.
You can't get through to Randy?
Well, I did to her people. I think Vicky may be her producer.
Yeah.
I'm not
sure who is still on her staff. I know that Air America has slashed her staff considerably. That's what I've heard.
Right.
Not working for Air America anymore, even though a lot of the stations that carry my program carry hers.
Sure.
So I don't know what's going on with Randy.
I don't either, because I sent several emails and left messages, and when I talked to Clint at the end of the day, he pretty much said, look, if they don't know who I am, it's because they don't want to. I've been talking to them for over a year, and they should know me. There might be a blackout going on, is what I'm saying, because this is before the election,
right,
and I was trying to help out. Anyway, you know, whatever it is, and your thoughts are welcome, of course. But, you know, getting to net neutrality, and that's why I called, I looked at the COPE Act, and that's the Communication Opportunity Promotion and Enhancement Act of 2006.
Oh, that's scary. That has a scary title, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'm watching a documentary about that, which I have to go take like 3 more hours of notes now to write my congresspeople. Scarily enough, Robert Wexler co-sponsored that. And I thought Wexler was one of our guys.
I thought he was, too. But you'd be surprised how many Democrats are not. Hey, guess what? There's the music. I'll tell you what. If you'll call tomorrow, Tiffany, I'll get you on earlier because I've had to cut you short here.
That's
okay?
All right. I certainly will.
Thanks, Tiffany.
I love you, Mike.
I love you, too, Tiffany.
Okay, bye.
Alan or Elaine writes in, your right-winger friend probably thinks Volvo is a part of the female anatomy. Yeah, probably does. All right, thanks, everybody, for participating in the program tonight. Even the freepers, you people do add some comic relief, even though it sounds like I'm having a nervous breakdown. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NovaM Radio.